I want to start by welcoming you here today. We're so glad that you chose to be with us this morning. Today, we're going to continue our study in Proverbs, a series we're calling Wise Up. And to get us headed in the same direction, I want us to start by taking a look at one of the most obscure, kind of strange moments in the Bible that's found inside one of the most famous stories in the Bible. So what I'm saying is, whether you've been in church a little bit or all of your life, you're probably going to be familiar with the story we're going to study. But you may not be familiar with the moment. Exodus chapter 8, second book in the Bible, Genesis, Exodus. In Exodus chapter 8, what's going on is this. God is using a man named Moses to bring down 10 plagues on Egypt. And the hope is that the Pharaoh, the king, will let God's people go. So the very first plague God uses Moses to bring is the plague of blood. All the rivers, streams, ponds turn to blood in the first plague, but it doesn't move Pharaoh's heart. The second plague on Egypt is the plague of frogs. It says there are frogs everywhere, in rivers, in streams, on streets, frogs in people's homes, in their beds, in their kitchens, in their pots and pans. And Pharaoh's heart kind of begins to soften a little bit. He has a willingness to let the people go. So Pharaoh and Moses have this conversation, and that's what I want us to see first of all this morning. Exodus chapter 8, verses 9 and 10. Moses said to Pharaoh, "I leave to you the honor of setting the time for me to pray for you and your officials and your people, that you and your houses may be rid of the frogs, except for those that remain in the Nile." "Tomorrow," Pharaoh said. Now, I want to stop right there. I mean, do you see what's going on? Pharaoh says, "Hey, you just tell me when you want the frogs to be gone, and the frogs will be gone." And Pharaoh says, "Tomorrow." Everybody say, "Tomorrow." Why in the world tomorrow? Why wait until tomorrow? Why delay? Why spend one more night with the frogs, right? I mean, the reason I bring all this up is because I think there's a tendency for all of us, myself included, to spend one more night with the frogs. There are points in my life where I know I need to make a decision, where you know you need to make a decision, but you procrastinate. You put things off. And the result is one more night of pain. One more night of bitterness, one more night of frustration or guilt, one more night with the frogs. Bob Russell was a preacher at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky for many years. During his time there, he would often say to his staff, to the people there, "If you have a frog to eat, eat it early." In other words, don't spend all day staring at something that you know you need to do. If you have a phone call to make, make it. If you have an email to respond to, send it. Do it. If you have a voicemail sitting on your phone that you know you need to listen to, listen to it. If you have a project around the house you need to do, every weekend this project is like a frog staring you in the face. Eat the frog this weekend. Attack it. Get that project done. Don't spend one more night with the frogs. Here's the thing, the book of Proverbs that we've been studying the past several weeks has a lot to say about putting things off or spending time with the frogs, except Proverbs calls it being lazy or sluggardly, depending on the version you're reading. Here's the thing, church, being lazy is something that is so easy to see in everybody else, right? But it's almost impossible to see in yourself. So here's what I want to do. I want to take a little time this morning and look at some indicators of a lazy lifestyle that Proverbs gives to us. We're going to go through these pretty quickly, and then we're going to get to the solution side of things. So get your notes ready. Number one, lazy people make excuses. Lazy people make excuses. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 13 says this, "The lazy person exclaims, 'There's a lion out there. If I go outside, I might be killed.'" I mean, do you see the excuse of a lazy person? There's something they need to do. They need to get up off the couch, get stuff done in the yard, get to work, and they say, "Hey, if I go outside, there might be a lion. I might die." I mean, the vivid imagination of laziness. We as human beings are so good at making excuses. Adam made excuses in the Garden of Eden when God asked if he'd eaten from the tree he'd commanded them not to eat. Genesis chapter 3, verse 12, Adam says, "The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree, and I ate it." I mean, excuses. Aaron made excuses to Moses when Moses asked him what the people had done to him that made him lead them into sin in fabricating the golden calf. Exodus chapter 32, verse 24, "So I told them," Aaron says, "whoever has any gold jewelry, take it off. Then they gave me the gold, and I threw it into the fire, And out came this calf. Really? Now, I came across some excuses people put on insurance claims when they get into the car wreck or a car accident. I mean, these are actual things, some ingenious excuses that people came up with. Here's the first one. I collided with a stationary truck coming the other way. I really like this one. I pulled away from the side of the road, glanced at my mother-in-law, and headed over the embankment. Now, just so you know, my mother-in-law and I, we get along great. We really care about one another. Here's the third one. In an attempt to kill a fly, I drove into a telephone pole. This next one might be my very favorite. The accident happened because I had one eye on the truck in front, one eye on the pedestrian, and one eye on the other car behind. That's three eyes. It's funny sometimes excuses we come up with to put on insurance claims, but when we make excuses with our one and only life, it's not that funny. But that's what happens when you get lazy with your life. Here's number two. Lazy people postpone responsibilities. Lazy people postpone responsibilities. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 9 through 11. How long will you lie there doing nothing at all? When are you going to get up and stop sleeping? Sleep a little, doze a little, you teenager. Just kidding. Fold your hands, twiddle your thumbs. Suddenly everything is gone, as though it had been taken by an armed robber. Someone once said, "Sorry, I can't today. My sister's friends, mother's, grandpa's, brother's, grandson's, uncle's fish died." And yes, it was tragic. The lazy person is someone who sees what needs to be done and says, "You know what, I see it, I recognize it, I'll do that later. I'll do that someday." Everybody say someday. I think someday is one of the most dangerous words in the English vocabulary. Someday, my marriage will improve. Someday, my kids will behave. Someday, someone is just going to float magically into my life that I can marry. Someday, I will get a plan and follow that plan and get out of debt. Someday, I'll retire. And when I retire, then I'll really be able to enjoy my life. Someday, when my schedule eases up, I'll get more involved in the church. Someday, when I get more money, I'll give more. A lot of times, I'm telling you, in your life and mine, someday is just a simple way to postpone responsibilities, to put off until tomorrow what we know and could and should be done today. Take a look at what the Bible says in the book of James, James chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Well, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. The Bible says when you look at your life along the landscape of humanity, it's kind of like a mist. I want to see if I can illustrate this here this morning. Are you ready? This is going to be this right here. That was you. That was me. Some of you, it's like a short you. Some of you, it's a long you, but that's you. There's not much to you when you put you on the landscape of humanity. You are like a mist. The Bible says don't put off until tomorrow what you could do today, but don't stop there. Look at what James continues to say. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone, then, knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. When you see things in your life that are good and you put them off or you get lazy with them, the Bible actually says that is wrong and sinful. It's just been in the last several years, I learned a huge truth. I'd kind of known it before but never put it together. I don't know if you realize this, but sin is not just the bad things that you do. Sin is also the good things you don't do. The good that we don't take advantage of in our life. The book of James says it's sinful when we don't do the good things we know we should do. Lazy people like to postpone responsibilities. Here's number three. Lazy people refuse to solve problems, even simple problems. When you see lazy people, it's like, well, why can't they solve this simple problem, but it seems so big to them? Maybe the best way I can illustrate this is this short clip. I think it shows what lazy people look like sometimes. Take a look at this.
That's not good.
Oh, I don't need this. I'm already late.
Somebody will come. Anybody out there?
Do you have a phone?
No. Sorry. Somebody! Hello? There are two people stuck on an escalator and we need help. Now, would somebody please do something?
Help! Help! Help!
I don't believe this. You gotta be kidding me.
I'm gonna cry.
Well, there's nothing else left to do, is it?
Hey, don't worry about it. I'll fix it in a second.
He said he can fix it. All right. All right. That's more like it. He says he can fix it.
Sometimes when we fail to solve the simple things right in front of us, it is just so silly. But that's what happens when we get lazy with our lives. Isaac Ortega, who baptized his son Gabriel today, shared with me that he was talking with Gabriel about sin and how it kind of works like weeds. When a weed first pops up in your yard, if you pull it right away, you'll have a much easier time keeping your yard nice. But if you let it go and don't solve a simple problem, don't deal with it, if you leave it, it won't be long before your entire yard is covered in weeds. At that point, the weeds have grown into your grass, and it takes much more difficult measures to clear your yard. No matter how hard you try, there will be some trace of weeds tarnishing your yard for the rest of the time you own it, perhaps. Sin works kind of like that. Except instead of your yard being tarnished, sin will leave marks on your heart and your character. Now, I know some of you are probably arguing with me in your head and thinking, okay, all that is great, but here's the thing. What does this talk about laziness and sluggardliness have to do with people like us here at Northeast, here in Grand Junction? I mean, if anything, we're too busy instead of too lazy. I mean, if that's what you're thinking in your mind, I would say to you, I probably agree. I mean, I think that's right. This is a pretty ambitious, pretty productive, pretty health-conscious, high-energy community. Here's what I would say to you. My fear, my concern is not what I would call a comprehensive laziness, but what I would call a selective laziness. My concern is not that you would be lazy across the board, but that we would be selectively lazy in certain areas of our life. I mean, something that can happen to any of us. So I want to spend the next portion of this message talking about some areas of our life where we have a tendency to become selectively lazy. Now, I want you to know, as I've said before, I'm not just preaching this at you. These are things that I wrestle with almost every single day, every week of my life, areas where I have to take initiative and not get lazy. The first area is in the area of family. It's so easy to be selectively lazy with family. Proverbs 11, verse 29 says, "Exploit or abuse your family and end up with a fistful of air." Common sense tells you it's a stupid way to live. One of the ways you and I can abuse our family is to just get lazy with them, to take our family for granted, to not put the kind of effort into our marriage or our family that they deserve. And one day, if you do that for too long, you may end up with a fistful of air. How many times in my own life over the past 10 to 15 years in ministry have I seen great men and great women who have incredible families, but they somehow maybe got a little bit lazy and they're gone. It's like air now. And I know that's not all families, but a lot of times what happens is we get selectively lazy in this area. And you know this is true. Great families and great marriages don't just happen. You're not just going to drift into one. The culture is not just going to blow you towards a great family. You're not going to wake up someday and say, "Wow, look at this. My family is amazing. I have no idea how this happened." No, you will know how it happened because it takes work. It takes initiative to have a world-class great family. I want to spend just a few moments talking to the men here today. Guys, I think one of the reasons we get lazy with our families, with our marriages, is that so often it is difficult to measure success or improvements or progress. At work, you have charts and graphs and profit margins and timelines and deadlines, and some of you punch a clock. At work, you can measure and quantify your progress, but at home, when you're home, you're just kind of home. And it's difficult to put a chart on the importance of having dinner together. It's hard to quantify the benefits of a family movie night. It's hard to measure the value of just being home 45 minutes early. You don't get bonuses for going above and beyond at home. You don't get corporate perks or corner offices when you're home. A lot of times you're just home. And here's what I would say to that. This is so simple but huge. A lot of you men need to understand that just being home is helpful. Being home is helpful. It's the first step in having a great, world-class type of family. Just being home. And when you're home, and I struggle with this all the time myself, but when you're home, be all there. Be engaged in taking initiative and not lazy in leadership in your home. And I know as I'm talking about family right now, some of you, God is speaking to your heart about your family. You know this is an area where you need to step it up. You need to take initiative. Don't get selectively lazy with your family. Here's another area where we get selectively lazy, and that is with our finances, in our financial lives. Did you know that the average American saved 2.7% of their income last year? 85% of people will reach retirement age with just $3,000 in savings. That's it. 70% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings right now. 34% of Americans have no savings at all. And I'm studying these figures, and I'm reading through this because that's telling me if you work 20, 30, 40 years and come to retirement age, roughly half of the people are going to have nothing to show for it in savings. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20 says, "In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has." The Good News Bible says it in a more direct way. It says, "Stupid people spend their money as fast as they can get it." And I think that's true sometimes, isn't it? I would challenge you, and the book of Proverbs would challenge you today in the area of finances to make a plan. Don't get lazy with the resources God has blessed you with. Proverbs 21, verse 5, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty." Put together a plan for your resources. Don't allow your financial life to be lazy. Maybe one of the best ways to illustrate this is to ask you a few questions, I think, and maybe put a good picture in your head. And don't answer these questions out loud, but did you take a shower today? Or maybe last night? Did you wash dishes this week? Did you wash clothes this week? If you did any of those things, let me tell you what made it possible. Whoever was designing your home or your apartment and creating that place, when they got ready to build it, they got together with some kind of an architect and a plumber or someone like that, and they found out in your street or your neighborhood where the water main is, and they took some pipe from that city water main and they hooked it into your house, which hooked into your washer and your shower and your dishwasher and all these different things, so that when you turned on the water, it would flow out of useful places in your home. When you turned on the water, it wouldn't just spray up like a geyser in your front yard. I'm telling you, they rooted it to useful places. That's what we should be doing with the resources God has given you. If you ask any financial expert, what's one of the best pieces of advice in your financial life, it's make a plan. There's lots of different kinds of plans, but make a plan and stick with it. Learn how to thoughtfully route your income to useful places. Learn how to do that. Don't allow your earnings to just spill out all over your life and get soaked up. If you don't have a plan, a good place to start for you might be a 10-10-80 plan. Well, what is that? I'm glad you asked. 10%, right off the top, the forefront, goes to God. 10% of your income, you give back to God. The next 10%, you put in savings. And then you discipline yourself to live on the remainder of the 80%. And some of you think, well, that's not possible. Trust me, it is possible. Trust the Lord, it is possible. It may require some tough decisions, some tough changes in your life, but running some sort of a 10-10-80 plan can work and can work very well. Take initiative. Don't get lazy with your financial life. This is an area where so many of us, myself included, so easy to just get lackadaisical. But let me just say this and then I'll move on. I'm going to make a statement here. This does not necessarily apply to everyone. I know that we all have a different amount of resources than maybe someone else does. But some of us have a lot more. Some of us have less. But how many of you, you have to agree, because where we live in the U.S., we are blessed. Because we live in the United States of America, we are blessed and we are rich simply because of where we live. And here's the thing. Whenever you have a lot of anything, it's real easy to get lazy with it. When you have a surplus of anything in your life, it's easy to get lazy with it and lackadaisical. And a lot of you, a lot of us, have a lot of resources. So I would say put together a good plan. Don't allow this to be an area of laziness for you. Honor God with all the resources that He's placed in your life. Here's another area in our lives. If we're not careful, we can become so sluggardly. It's in the area of faith. To talk about it, to study it, should probably be broken down into two areas: sharing your faith and owning your faith. Both of these, depending on who you are, what season of your life, can be areas where it's just easy to be lazy from time to time, to not take initiative. And I've got to tell you, we cannot afford to be lazy in these areas. So let me kind of unpack that for just the next few moments. First of all, I want to talk about owning your faith. Owning your faith. Let me ask this question, and you just answer this in your mind. Here's the question: how do you know what you know about God? How do you know what you know about God? I mean, does everything you know about God come to you from your parents, your friends, a priest, a pastor, your favorite author or musician? How do you know what you know about God? Now, it's a great thing to have people of faith in your life, but I also know that at some point in our lives, you have to own your own faith. My guess is this, I'll take a stab at it, but there are probably several people here today who need to accept Jesus into their life as their Lord and Savior, and you know it. And you know you need to talk to someone when the service is over, but you always have so many things to do and you always just put it off. You know you need to go to our Starting Point class. You've heard about Starting Point for several weeks. You know you need to get baptized, but you just kind of put it off. Here's what I would say to you. Please don't misunderstand me here. You're not a lazy person. I get that. In fact, you may be one of the most productive, successful people in our whole church, but you've allowed yourself to become selectively lazy in your faith, in your relationship with God, with His Son, Jesus Christ. And here's what Jesus would say about that in the Bible, Matthew chapter 16, verse 25 through 26. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? In other words, what Jesus is saying is this: you can take initiative in every single area of your life. You can be one of the most productive people in the world, but if you get lazy with your faith and your relationship with God, you've lost everything. Friends, I would beg you, do not allow this to be an area where you get lazy. If you need to take some initiative and own your own faith, do so, even this weekend. Hey, I'm going to dive in. I'm going to talk to somebody. I'm going to sign up for Starting Point. I'm going to get baptized. I'm going to begin to serve now. Not someday, but now. Do not allow this to be an area where you just get selectively lazy. Own your own faith. Here's another part of that: in sharing your faith. I mean, this could be a whole sermon series. It's hard sometimes to figure out how to share our faith in Jesus. And, you know, this is something I constantly have to be on guard against getting lazy with. I don't know if you're aware of this, but statistics say after a person becomes a Christian, within 7 years, almost all of their friends are other Christians. I mean, you become a Christian and you get involved in church and you're going to Bible study and you're doing these things, you're hanging out with your Christian friends, and if you're not careful, all of your friends will be Christians. You've got to intentionally continue to share your faith. Now, I know that you might find this hard to believe, some of you, but God has put you where He put you on purpose. God has you right where He wants you. And some of you might be thinking, well, I don't know what you mean. I said, well, I promise you, God is not up in heaven today looking down on your life and saying, you still work there? I had no idea you were still working there. Let me tell you something. You are still working where you're working because there's still work to do at your work. And you say, Seth, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand what you're saying. I get all my work done. My employer's very happy with me. Everything's going great. Listen, God has things He wants you to get done at your work. Maybe that's why you're still there. And some of you may want to get a new job. You want a new job so bad you can hardly breathe. You want to know one of the best ways to get a new job? Get the work done at the work God has given you. Talk to the people there. Share Jesus with the people there. And then maybe God will move you to a new place to share Jesus with other people. Students, junior high, high school, college students, the school you're at now, God is not surprised. God knows exactly where you are. He knows that English teacher that is tough. He knows the biology you don't like. He knows the people you sit with at lunch. And students, could I just say something to you? Could it be that your junior high or high school or college is not a popularity contest, but a mission field? It's a mission field. God has put you around people that are far from Him, and He wants you to be able to share your faith with them. What about this? What about where we live? What about our neighborhoods? God is not surprised where you live. God has put you where He's put you on purpose. And there's no doubt in my mind, if somehow today we could see beyond our humanity and see into the mysterious realm of God in our world and the way He orchestrates things, there's no doubt in my mind He's put you where He's put you, in a condo or an apartment complex or a neighborhood, because He knows there's someone right across the hall or at the end of the cul-de-sac or across the street who's going through tough times, and God just needs you to walk across the street. You are close to someone who is far from God. Here's one other thing on this topic. The reason I think it's easy to get lazy or sluggardly in our faith is sometimes we think that we're going to have to tell this person everything about the Bible. We're going to have to tell them everything about God. We're going to have to introduce them to Jesus. We're going to have to be perfect. Let me tell you something. Whether it's in your home or school or workplace or neighborhood, you don't start at scratch with anyone. God is already working in the lives of every single person that you meet during the week. All you have to do is join Him where He's working already and begin to share the message of Jesus. Don't get lazy in owning your faith or in sharing your faith with others. It's easy to get lazy, but let's be a church that decides that will not categorize us. Here's the takeaway this morning. Where do you need to take initiative this week? Family, finances, or faith? And some of you might be thinking, well, it's all of them. Here's what I would say to you, and I'm not encouraging you to be lazy, but don't try all of them. Pick one of these that you can absolutely attack this week. Well, I'm going to pick my family. I'm going to pick my faith. I'm going to pick finances. Attack that one thing this week. Decide you're no longer going to be selectively lazy. Maybe productive in all these other areas, but selectively lazy in these other ones. So don't be that person. Let's pray together.